Hi again, and welcome back to the Airman's Podcast, episode 153. It's Monday, April 20th, 2009. Well, Nigel's annual leave is all over, the Easter holiday is all over, and it's sort of back to normal. And that means, among other things, that I'm finally going to get around to telling you about the new Auckland Super City, so-called, and what that means. And I've got kind of an unusual way of doing that. But first, I'm going to talk a little bit about this holiday that just passed, some of the things we did, sort of bring you up to date on where things are right now. But first, one of the things I'm best known for, probably, is coming up with all sorts of really useless information. I call it my generally useless but nevertheless interesting file, although other people may disagree on whether or not it's interesting. However, with respect to Easter, first of all, did you know that the Easter Bunny is not a rabbit but a hare? And hares, it's got to do with ears and stuff, but hares are sacred or were sacred to the Saxon goddess of spring called Eostre or something, E-O-S-T-R-E, which is where our word Easter comes from. Now, our modern Easter bunny is basically a sanitized version of this hare, who was a symbol of fertility, of the moon, of rebirth, all those kinds of things. So Easter, I mean, we all knew that Easter had nothing to do with Christianity. The word Easter had nothing to do with Christianity. And it was just another one of those holidays that became pagan holidays that became Christianized, much like Christmas was. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. And no, I didn't know that, and I also didn't look it up. It came to me through reading this book called The Book of General Ignorance, with a foreword by Stephen Fry. And it's sort of right up my alley, because it's chock full of useless information. Some of it is really interesting, some of it is not at all, some of it I probably could have done without knowing. But I'll just read the back panel to you. It says, "Everything you think you know is wrong." And some of this I knew, some of this you may have known, but test yourself. Henry VIII had only two wives. The earth has seven moons. All human beings have four nostrils. The steam engine was invented in ancient Greece. Coffee is not made from beans. Strawberries are not berries. Bangkok is not the capital of Thailand. Over 1 billion people have been killed by marmots. The largest thing a blue whale can swallow is a grapefruit. There are 80,000 planets in the solar system. George Washington's teeth previously belonged to a hippopotamus. Light is invisible. So those are some of the things that they go over in the book. And some of them, as I said, I knew. Some of them I didn't. And most of it is generally pretty useless. But I still find it interesting because I like useless information. Now, this was a long holiday because Nigel took this past week off, took it as annual leave. But he did it around, of course, Easter holiday, which is a four-day weekend in New Zealand, because both Good Friday and Easter Monday are public holidays. So he really only had to take 4 days off in order to get, what was it, 10 days off, something like that. So that worked really well. His mother came up to stay with us on Saturday, and went home on Wednesday morning. So we all had a grand time eating and drinking and watching movies and all sorts of stuff like that. And a little bit of shopping, but not much. Most of what we did over this break was what you Americans call a staycation. We stayed in the house. Well, not necessarily in the house, but stayed close to home. Just maybe would go to a cafe not far away. Although we did go into Auckland City to the cafe a cafe that some friends of ours recently bought, and just to sort of support them and so on. That was nice. But apart from that, it was pretty much a quiet affair. Now, technically, you could say the whole holiday began the week before, just before Easter on Thursday, when we went to the New Zealand premiere of the new Star Trek movie. I have blogged about this, and I tweeted about it as well. But the gist of it is that there was a charity in New Zealand called Kids Can Stand Tall, which was was benefiting, I guess, from some of the screenings. There was a VIP screening that we weren't invited to. And now, clearly, that was an oversight, but we weren't invited. But we bought the tickets to the other one, and it was really good. The movie was good, but the whole thing was a lot of fun. And, I mean, it's been years since I was last at a movie premiere. Yeah, right. Anyway, that was sort of the beginning, and then it went into our normal Friday night takeaways with Nigel's sister and niece. And then from there, we just had the weekend, and then we had a casual relaxing week, and now everything's back to normal again. Nigel's sister's gone off to Sydney for a few days. She'll be back at the end of the week. And I've got a few odds and ends to clear up this week. And among those things, Jason and I will be recording a two political podcast this week. And then the first week in May, I'm busy with work again. So that's sort of some of the things that are coming up in the foreseeable future. Now, about this Auckland Super City. First of all, I hate the name. I really hate the name Super City because there's nothing super about it. I don't know who coined that or why, but it is a silly name because it just opens up the opportunity for people just to make fun of the name even without going into any of the ideas or the real problems that face Auckland. So I prefer Unified City or some variation on that instead of Super City. Because let's face it, I mean, when this Super City is finished, created, it'll have about 1.3 million people roughly in it, which means it's smaller than a lot of American cities. So, I mean, in the overall scheme of things, it's hardly very super. Although, having said that, it will have roughly a third of the population of New Zealand living within it. So in that sense, it's super. It's super in New Zealand terms. But the situation basically going into this is that the Auckland region is governed by 8 different councils. And I have explained before how in New Zealand, the city that people will say they're from generally means a metro region, as I would call it in the U.S. For instance, in American terms, it's as if somebody who lived just somewhere outside in Cook County said they were from Chicago and meant Chicago. It's hard to kind of get your head around because they use the word suburb in New Zealand in an almost British way, meaning a suburban unit, a small part of the city. As I would probably call that a neighborhood in New Zealand, it's called a suburb. And as a city is a legal entity, but it's also sort of a concept, you could say. So a lot of people in this area will say they're from Auckland, even if they don't actually live in Auckland City. Now, the councils that govern this area, there's 4 city councils, 2 districts, let's see, 4, 5, 6, a regional council, 7, I missed one somewhere. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of layers of local government. Now, the regional council that sits on top of everything, they have these all over the country, and they're essentially responsible for transport and environmental issues, you know, basically keeping the environment shipshape, and not much else. So they don't really do very much. They can't just sort of take over the powers of a local city. The previous Labour-led government put through, as I said before, a royal commission into the governance of Auckland to determine what was going to be the structure, what should happen with the structure of Auckland. And the options were leave it as it is now with all these different councils, or they could form, say, or they could go to the other extreme and form one city, or they could do something in between, like, say, have 3 cities or something. Well, the Royal Commission came back and recommended one city. And it's something that, generally speaking, most people are kind of on that page, you could say. There are some people who aren't, but generally speaking, most people are in favor of that. The problem becomes, how is this going to be governed? Well, first of all, they're going to have one mayor for the whole city. And the mayor is going to be elected citywide, pretty much as you'd expect. The mayor will appoint his or her own deputy mayor rather than the council doing it. And the mayor will do the budget and do several other things, which they are saying is kind of presidential. But to my mind, it's more in keeping with the way mayors in other major cities operate, say Chicago, for instance, which I'm probably most familiar with, but many other American cities as well, and probably cities in other parts of the world. But it's unusual here. Here, it's usually the city council who does the budgeting, the city council determines who's the deputy mayor, and all those kinds of things. So it's putting a lot more power in the hands of the mayor. The Royal Commission proposed that there be 23 city councillors, and 10 of them were going to be elected from wards, election districts. 10 would run at large, citywide, and 3 of them would be set aside for Māori. That's another issue I'm going to come back to that. But first, about the ward versus at-large. Their reasoning was that if you have councillors running at-large, they will represent the entire region. And they're less likely to be as parochial as the individual councils are now because they're only interested in their own little piece of turf. The government didn't agree with that, and they decided that there would be 12 councillors elected from wards, 8 elected at large, and no Māori seats at all. Which brings me, of course, back to the Māori seats. The way New Zealand works, there's a constitutional relationship between Māori, as the tangata whenua, or people of the land, and the Crown. And among other things, there are certain seats in Parliament that are set aside for Māori alone. Māori voters have the right to register either in the general electoral roll, like anybody else like me, or they can enroll on the Māori roll, which is only open to people of Māori descent. As far as I know, there's no specification about how Māori you have to be. But anyway, and in Parliament, that has in the past been very important, because without it, chances are good there would have been no Māori representation in Parliament at all. Nowadays, there are some councils that have seats on their local councils set aside for Māori, voting on the Māori roll. And this was made possible by the Local Government Act, I think it's 2001 or something, I can't remember. At any rate, that's when local councils were given the authority to do that if they wanted to. There's no requirement that they do it, but they were given the option, and some did and some didn't. The problem with the Royal Commission recommendation was that they recommended that 2 be elected by Māori from voting from the electoral roll, and that the third one be appointed by the basically the tribal elders. And that didn't sit well with me. I'm not a big fan of race-based representation anyway, but I definitely don't like the idea of a feudal system determining who's going to be on a council, which ultimately is responsible for all the citizens of the city. Well, the government, the national-led government, decided it wasn't going to have any Māori seats, as I said. And that is now a major bone of contention. Māori are saying that if there aren't seats, if they don't have specially designated seats, that it will be virtually impossible for them to be elected to the new city council. And that's probably true, because there is no one area which is dominated by Māori, or Pacific Islanders for that matter, and they are unlikely to win a citywide election. As a matter of fact, the citywide seats, the 8 at large that the government wants, are most likely to come from people who are rich and or well-known, and very probably older white males. It's very unlikely that a minority of any sort will be able to win a citywide election. And to my mind, they're inherently anti-democratic, and I would prefer that they get rid of those altogether. It seems to me that the best way forward for the makeup of the city council, which they're calling the Auckland Council, would be to take those 8 at-large seats, have 2 of them elected by Māori from the Māori roll, and the other 6 from wards, and have no at-large seats. I just think it's a disaster waiting to happen. What you're going to end up with is councillors who are rivals to the mayor, because they also have a citywide constituency just like the mayor. And I think it's going to end up devolving into a whole bunch of fighting and carrying on rather than any kind of, any kind of representative system. So I am not keen on that. But the biggest fight of all is what happens the layer below that. The Royal Commission proposed that there be these smaller councils in kind of representing fourths of the new city, roughly, and that they be elected from wards, and that one of them be elected as the chairman of this board, and they'd be replaced by the next highest vote getter. Well, that sounds okay, except that these boards or whatever had no real power. They couldn't set rates or property taxes. They couldn't budget. They couldn't really do anything, and so they were kind of impotent. But the Royal Commission also eliminated all of what are called community boards, which are basically smaller boards, neighborhood boards sort of thing. The government has decided that they're going to get rid of these 4 boards and instead have 20 to 23, I think it is, or 27, whatever, community boards. But they still have no real powers, and it's unclear how many they're going to be or how many people are going to be on these community boards. And this is where I think the main fight is going to be. Now, the government plans on introducing this under urgency, which means that basically there's very little chance for public input. Now, I suspect what's going to happen is that they will do the enabling legislation to create the transition board, and then the rest of the details will be the public will have the opportunity to have input. At least that's what I'm hoping will happen. I don't know that that's the way they're going to do it. This government has rushed a lot of really controversial things through under urgency. And it isn't a good look, but it isn't a good idea, I don't think, especially because some of them ultimately are going to be quite contentious as people realize what the government has done. And when you're talking about such a huge thing as reorganizing Auckland, you want to have as much input as possible. I don't think we should go back and relook at this whole question of having one city because it's been litigated to death. The Royal Commission was looking into this for a year and a half. People had ample opportunity to have their input into what they wanted. So I don't think we should relook at that. However, what happens underneath that Auckland Council, I think people ought to have the right to have a say in because that was not part of the deal. We didn't know we were going to get that specifically, and I think that we should be given the opportunity to say what we want. But we'll see if we get that or not. It's entirely up in the air at this stage. But I don't know. A lot of the opponents are going on and on about how it's not going to save ratepayers any money. It's not going to mean lower taxes. And I think that they're missing the point. The point isn't to bring down rates or property taxes. The point is to gain efficiencies so that things actually happen. Auckland is notorious for its lack of regional coordination, both in transport in particular, both in the road network and also in things like buses and trains and ferries. There's no coordination in any of those services. And there can't be under the current structure because each city is a TERF and they guard their TERF jealously. One of the cities, Manukau City, built a highway, a motorway basically, from their city to Auckland. Auckland, however, decided not to continue the highway, so it stops at the Auckland boundary. And it's just dumb that this sort of thing can go on like this. So with any luck, these problems are going to be seen to. Now, here's the thing. It's got to be dealt to by 2010, because that's the next local body elections. And that's about 18 months away or so. So that's why the government is rushing it through under urgency. And hopefully, it'll all turn out okay. Now, for more on this, for other points and all that, I have a special commentary from Scotty from Little Aussie Battler.
G'day, Arthur. This is Scotty here, your little Aussie battler. And I just thought I would ring up and comment on the mega council that Auckland is going to get, and which you seem pretty positive about. I, just for argument's sake, have some negative views on that. Living in Brisbane, which is the capital of Queensland in Australia, Brisbane is a really big city council. It basically covers the whole entire city. Because Brisbane was like a penal colony, and when it was first invented, that's all it was going to be, was basically a jail. So they pretty much just drew off a massive area and said, that's Brisbane. So unlike Sydney and Melbourne, which has a whole lot of small, local kind of city councils or areas, Brisbane just has one massive city council which covers the whole city of what's the population, about 1.8 million people roughly. Could be a bit less because there are some councils on the edge of Brisbane which technically aren't Brisbane, but some of them do run into Brisbane as like being really, really kind of the outlying suburbs, like Caboolture in the north and Logan in the south. And then Ipswich is out to the west. So because Brisbane is such a big council, they've pretty much just run riot for the past 100 and whatever years. And because they're so big and they have so much power, I think it's actually quite a detrimental thing. Or it has been a detrimental thing in this, probably in our circumstance, because it's been going on for so long. So pretty much it's, you know, the capital of Queensland, so it's obviously where all the state government departments and everything else is run. And of course, in being Australia, capitals of states means that they are also the biggest cities, unlike in America. So, you know, kind of a lot of stuff is happening in Brisbane, and obviously most of the population is here, and therefore a lot of infrastructure is required. Now, because the Brisbane City Council is so big and so powerful and can kind of do what it likes and is in charge of so much, it's really meant that for decades they've done nothing, or the things they have done have been purely kind of their own self-interest. Just as an example of how big Brisbane City Council is, the annual budget of Brisbane City Council is actually bigger than the budget of the entire state of Tasmania. And Tasmania, as you know, is the island down the bottom of Australia. So the budget of one city is actually more than the budget of an entire state. So it's pretty big and does have a lot of power. So because Brisbane City Council's in charge of all the roads, that means over the last, quite recently, over the last 5 years, they've started to do things like, we just recently have started to build massive tunnels under the city, which of course are going to be toll roads. And this is because Brisbane's public transport is so crap. And one of the reasons why it's so crap is because Brisbane City Council is in charge and owns all the buses.
Okay, I just want to interrupt to compare and contrast a little bit. Basically, so far, what Scotty's been talking about the way Brisbane is, the situation in Brisbane and Auckland are almost exactly opposite each other. Brisbane, of course, has been a large council for a long time. Auckland has been a lot of little councils for a long time. Granted, a few less than there used to be. There used to be a lot more than there are now, but it's been fragmented for its entire existence, and so now it's going the other way. It's coalescing. And the reason for that is because Auckland is the largest city in New Zealand, much as Brisbane is the largest city in Queensland, but it's also the most important city in New Zealand, because the most of what comes into and out of New Zealand goes through Auckland. And that's certainly true with people as well. International arrivals and departures are mostly through Auckland. So if Auckland isn't doing well, the entire country doesn't do well. And that's really the imperative behind all of this. As far as transportation goes, Auckland doesn't own anything. It doesn't own buses, ferries, or trains. The previous national government sold off the bus lines years ago. And the ferries, I believe, have always been privately owned, as far as I know. Now, the trains are now owned by the national government, the central government. The previous Labor-led government bought them back from their Australian owners, actually. And they're in the process of trying to upgrade and electrify the lines because they still use diesel. But what the hope is that once the competing parochial interests are gone, that there can be centralized transportation planning. Because for right now, for instance, there is no coordination in the timetables between any service, buses, trains, ferries. And with one authority, there very well will be, finally, and unified ticketing. So you can get off a train and get on a bus and keep going. You don't have to buy a new ticket as you do now. So that's what's behind all of this. It's about fixing the problems that have been caused by being too fragmented. So in a very real sense, Auckland has the exact opposite problems that Brisbane has. Right, now on with what Scotty was saying.
But anyway, so Brisbane City Council's in charge of the buses, which means for decades they have had a pretty crap bus network and quite an expensive bus network, and have done all their own things with ticketing and rah, rah, rah. That has recently changed, and they have introduced integrated tickets with the rail and with the ferries. Brisbane City Council also owns the ferry network, which are, by ferries I mean the boats that go up and down the river, stopping at various places, you know, so public transport again. So because the rail network in Brisbane is crap, and that's owned by the state government, and only has, like, there's very few railway lines in Brisbane, it means that the bus network is by far the biggest and kind of goes the furthest. So due to all the people moving to southeast Queensland, or more specifically Brisbane, from around Australia.
Me again. Scotty's too nice to say it, but it's also the number one destination for Kiwis moving to Australia, Brisbane is. Anyway.
The whole entire area is just buckling under the weight of all the people. So all the roads are clogged, the public transport can't cope. So Brisbane City Council's idea is to build massive tunnels under the city and to build toll roads, toll bridges, and toll tunnels. Which I don't think is a good idea. The state government is doing pretty much nothing about building train lines or a subway system or anything like that. Probably on the good side of things of a big council is the fact that we do have some quite good services and quite a lot of services, and the services like libraries, free things that the council puts on in local areas is pretty good. But I do think we also do pay for that through our council rates, or what do they call it in England? Council tax, or maybe land tax. I don't know what else it's called, but basically the council rates. And I pay, it's about $440 a quarter for my council rates, which, you know, is like the sewerage, getting the rubbish taken away, and who knows what else, basically for the privilege of having a block of land in Brisbane.
Okay, that's another difference. In New Zealand, rates, the local property taxes, pay for local roads, parks, reserves, lighting, local events, those kinds of things. But water and wastewater are handled separately through different rates. You have, you know, water meter, and they base your sewerage on how much water you consume. They figure how much you must be putting out as well. And rubbish you pay for, more or less user pays basis. I'm sure it must be partly subsidized, at least by the council. But we pay for each bag that's collected separately. And of course, recycling is free, and that is actually taking off really quite a lot in the Auckland region anyway.
The rates in the city, I think, are quite expensive, especially people who've bought high-rise like apartments have really been slugged over the last couple of years with rapidly increasing council rates. So there you go. I should probably finish because this is going way too long. Thanks, Arthur. Enjoy the show and look forward to hearing your thoughts on how Auckland Council will hopefully get these things right. Bye.
Well, thanks very much for that, Scotty. And I think it's actually kind of useful to have a sort of compare and contrast with another area in this part of the world. I'm always talking about how Auckland or New Zealand generally compares with what I know in the US, but I think it's interesting to hear how it compares with other places closer to it. It is going to be an interesting thing to see what happens, to see how the governance ends up shaping up. I'm hoping that it will end up being more democratic than either the Royal Commission or the government proposal has suggested, but we'll have to see, and I'll certainly keep you up to date with what ends up happening. In the overall scheme of things, all other things being equal and all those other trite little phrases, I do think that one city for the Auckland region is the best way to go, because the lack of unity is holding the region back. And as I said before, Auckland is vitally important to New Zealand. If it doesn't succeed, New Zealand can't succeed. And that's the gist of where we're at. It's going to be painful and it's going to be difficult to bring about this unified city. There are going to be problems with taxes. There are going to be problems with turf wars as the new council beds in once it finally is set up one way or another. But I think ultimately it's going to make it much easier for Auckland to compete on the world stage with cities its own size and sometimes cities that are bigger. It's going to be good to have unified planning, for one thing. But It could all still go very bad. And I'll let you know what happens as it happens. But for right now, that's it for this edition of the Amerinds podcast. As I said, I will be back with Jason for a Two Political podcast later this week, and possibly not again. I may not be back again till next week, but we'll see how it goes. Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave a comment. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amerinds podcast at amerindspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amerindspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed on a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.